Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
Bernard would come in with some really, really valuable advice about business development.
If you try hard enough and you have an open mind, I think you can form a connection with just about anybody. And it, some situations are certainly very challenging. And on the surface, it might appear that one hasn't got that much in common with somebody else. But actually, we're all human beings at the end of the day. I do think skills are being eroded. I mean, within a BD context, you know, historically, traditional networking has been a key activity. I don't think it's quite the be-all and end-all today that it was historically. However, it's still important, and even basics like looking at someone in the eye.
Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Welcome back to HRER. This will be part of the guest series, Mac 2 of the guest series, if you like.
Yep. So first time round, we had Paul McGregor from Every Mind, we had Lucy Aylin from Never Fully Dressed, and we had Jilly from YM&U.
We did, yeah. I'm glad you remembered them all.
Yeah, I did. I got started then and I thought, oh, I've committed now. This is it. I've got to get all those names in.
Excellent.
So this is second time round with guests, and today we have Bernard Savage joining us. Bernard and I met a long time ago when I was back at my previous law firm. So when I was working at Gamlins and I was head of employment there.
Okay.
And Bernard would come in with some really, really valuable advice about business development, which, you know, for solicitors, we're all about how do we keep bringing the work in? How do we keep going after getting those clients? So people like Bernard, really, really valuable for solicitors. And then ever since then, we joined forces and I go out and deliver training with Bernard. Bernard obviously is still focusing on business development and I do the HR side of things. And there's a third part to it, isn't there, Bernard?
There is.
The stuff that we all hate and all have a bit of a shudder when we think about it.
Numbers,
the finances. So really nice kind of packaging, particularly for when you've got solicitors who are coming up to make partner, accountants wanting to progress their businesses, and, you know, professional services, I'd say, Bernard. But I'll let you introduce yourself. You tell us who you are, what you do, and why our HR audience and business leaders should be listening to what you've got to say.
Okay. Well, firstly, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on. So, yeah, I for the last 20 years, I have run a business called 10 and a half, which works with like-minded people in professional services who agree with me that just being a good solicitor or good accountant or good patent attorney actually isn't enough to be commercially successful in a sustainable way in a world that's changing faster and faster and faster. I think in the old days, you could put a sign above the door and say, we're a law firm, and you're good to go, and people would throw money at you. I think it's a little bit harder today, hence the need for a more commercial and more rounded approach. As a business, we work with professional services, all shapes and sizes. But if there is a sweet spot, there's probably sort of stronger regional players, what we describe as medium-sized firms. We've worked with bigger, and we've worked with smaller. For me, I'm interested in people that are commercial. That's where I'm coming from. And I think there is a connection with HR. I'm going to tell a story. I thought about this in the preparation, thought the stories are always better if you could be specific and name names. And I think I can name names because it presents the other person in a positive light. It presents me in a less than positive light. But I'm going to go for it. You can always edit it out afterwards.
We can.
Many years ago, so before I ran this consultancy business, I worked in a very sort of traditional blue chip environment at Procter & Gamble and then at Shell. And in my latter days at P&G, which was in the late 90s, there was an HR director called Valerie Robert. And again, I'll fess up and say that 25 years ago, being stating the obvious, 25 years younger, a bit dafter, and perhaps having some of the traits at the time of a sort of traditional sales professional, I didn't fully appreciate the value that HR and people policies could bring to the table. And I remember having lunch with this HR director, and it was a difficult lunch because I hadn't really bought into the idea that culture is the most important thing in organizations. And if you don't understand the culture, then doesn't matter how good you are at your job, it's not going to work. But let's just say there wasn't a meeting of minds. Fast forward 25 years later, and probably the single biggest thing I've learned when I'm in somebody else's organization is that you have to understand how things work around here. And it doesn't matter how good you are technically at your job. If you don't understand the nuance of that environment, then it ain't going to work. And being somebody who will say I got it wrong when I got it wrong, I tracked Valerie Robert down, and she's now in a very senior role at Nestle in Geneva. And I sent her a message via the wonders of LinkedIn saying, you might not remember me, but we met 25 years ago and I was a daft sales person and I had this view and we didn't massively get on. And she wrote back a nice note which said, I do remember you. I'm pleased you've learned your lesson. And all credit to Valerie, and I do respect her for this. She was actually kind enough to help me out on a client engagement where I wanted to pick her brain on something. So I think the moral of the story is put your hands up when you do something wrong and listen to people that know stuff you don't.
There's a lot of people out there as well that don't obviously have the same skill set as you. So it's two ears and one mouth for a reason, eh?
Yeah, and I think the other connection in terms of us having this conversation today is it's about recognizing that where one's individual strengths and weaknesses lie, and bringing in people around you to plug those gaps or those areas where people are better qualified. And hence, you know, where we've collaborated, Alyssa, I wouldn't pretend to have your insight, experience, and knowledge on issues related to people, hence why it works. Mm. And even better is you make me look good. And why would you not want to work with someone that makes you look good?
I think you're right about, you know, when you're saying, you know, you need to understand the way things work here. And I think when I look back at some of the first training that I delivered when we first went out together, it's evolved so much from, you know, the typical, this is what we need to do and how we don't get sued. And, you know, we'd be tiptoeing around firms that had employment departments or had strong HR departments. Whereas now the feedback and the need that I see is much more around that. How we use emotional intelligence, how we goal set properly, how we can delegate, and what are the skills that we need? How do we set psychologically safe workplaces? And found that lands so much better with people who are developing, who are trying to develop, you know, their people management skills and want to get on at work. So I've seen that evolution in probably less than 10 years. So from your perspective, when it comes to business development, what are the trends and what evolution have you seen?
I think I'll answer the question, but I think there's a direct parallel with HR in that often organizations, certainly historically, have used the word strategy in a very casual way when actually they've been talking about tactics, whether those are people tactics or BD tactics. And I think one thing that is changing for the better today is that at the top table, organizations understand that any business, doesn't matter if there's a law firm or a chain of fish and chip shops, there's four key business drivers. There's a financial one, there's a people one, there's an operational one, and then there's a clients, which includes marketing and BD. And I think that's the change, that now marketing BD, certainly in the more progressive organizations like HR and people, is being dealt in a at the top table, is being managed genuinely strategically, which means it's about being proactive rather than reactive. And it's about connecting everything with the commercial goals and aspirations, vision of the business, rather than there's a problem. So if it's a people problem, can you clear up this mess? And if there's a problem because the work's not coming in, then marketing would be involved because you've got to generate fees. I think that's the big difference.
From my perspective and what I've seen through my career is when we used to look at the compilation of C-suite, you know, what you've just touched on there, we'd have, you know, a chief marketing officer, we'd have a CEO, we'd have, you know, our FD. And often HR are left out of those strategic conversations.
Why do you think HR is still left out of them sort of financial and strategy-based business plan type meetings?
I think there's a number of reasons, and I think one could be very critical of C-suites and say it's all their fault. But I think in fairness, I think HR professionals have to take some of the culpability as well. And I would argue that you might take offense at support function. I'm not sure the language is right, but I think if you're in a senior people role or indeed senior BD role, it is your responsibility to be visible and develop strong internal relationships to help in that process of education. So, I don't think it's about getting stroppy with C-suite because they don't understand. I think it's incumbent upon senior HR professionals and indeed senior BD professionals to be visible, invest time with people, and educate people subtly rather than lecturing them.
And I think I've never been one to beat around the bush. When I want something, I'll ask for it. So, historically, whenever I've wanted to be promoted, then I have asked for that promotion and given the reasons why I deserve it. When I've wanted to be at that management table, I've pulled up a seat and said why I need to be there. What tips do you have for people who maybe don't either have that level of, like I say, confidence, arrogance? I don't know. I'm sure people I've worked with would tell me which of the two it is. To have those conversations, what tips do we have for people who want to progress and do that, almost the internal business development rather than that external piece?
I think I'm going to keep this simple. We can overcomplicate things, but a lot of it comes down to, I prefer to use the word visibility. Are you visible? And I'll share another story. I can't believe this is another one where I got it wrong, but I've learned by making mistakes. So the start of my journey within the legal sector was in-house as a marketing director at Eversheds, the law firm. And there were comments at the time, and this is 25 years ago, that I wasn't visible. And the conclusion was, if you're not visible, you're not adding value. So it is as simple as just make sure you're in the office. Now, within a hybrid environment and with a world where increasingly not everybody is in the office, and people will come up with quite credible arguments to say they're more productive or as productive working from home. That's all well and good. But I think when it comes to relationship building, you need to have to look someone in the eyes. So I don't think it's about having clever sales strategies particularly. I think it's about make sure you're visible. And the other strategy I find that's quite helpful is just asking for, can I pick your brain on something, or can I there's something I'd like to get your feedback on. And I found over the years in my career that if you've got the confidence to ask people for feedback or ask them whether they'd be comfortable for you to pick their brain, they're very receptive. Why? One, because they feel a bit flattered. Two, because they're intrigued what you're going to ask for. And third, effectively, you're taking them into your confidence. So I think it's about having honest conversations with people. And it's easier to do when you haven't been in that role very long or you haven't been in that organization very long. But I think if people take more personal initiative and are proactive and don't have concerns about, will I be judged poorly if I ask for help or shouldn't I know that already? I think people respect you more. I think people respect you more when you involve them in the process of learning and discovery.
And I think if you're in an organization that, is going to throw that judgment around, you're probably in the wrong place. I think particularly for people's progression these days, if you came to me, Ollie, and asked me for feedback or, we're having those sorts of conversations, I cannot think that we'd ever be in a situation where I'd be like, I can't believe he's asked me that.
How dare you?
And I think if you're in a place that's psychologically unsafe, where you can't have those conversations that are clearly geared around progression, it's probably not the right business for you.
At the same time as well, you mentioned there, Bernard, being curious and sort of asking people questions. Most people, most of the time, are very happy to be put in, like you say, a flattered position to be like, oh, you want my help?
Yeah.
When you're like, I've got this problem, and I'm like, have you cleared cash? For example, which is quite a basic thing. But people don't know how certain data affects like certain browser windows and stuff. And I think as experts in certain fields, we definitely take our expertise for granted because it's always in your brain.
Yeah.
Not anyone else's.
I always found that as well on my way up, is that people like to talk about themselves. They like to talk about their own experiences, how they did it, and, you know, be able to wax lyrical and say, oh, well, back in my day, this happened. And, you know, I catch myself doing it now.
Especially celebs, Alyssa. If you ever bump into a celeb on a train, I guarantee you, all you got to do is get them to speak, to tell them about themselves. They love it. There's one bit I would add, and this might, I don't know, does it contradict what I said about being in the office? I find often the formality of a traditional office environment can be sometimes a bit stifling if you want to have those more intimate conversations. And I'm a massive fan of just go into the office, but drag someone to the nearest decent independent coffee shop and have a chat with them over a cup of coffee. People outside of that kind of corporateness, people tend to open up a little bit more. Even more when you buy the coffee yourself.
And I think people buy people, don't they? So if you have got that ability to be able to connect on a bit more of a personal level, obviously remaining appropriate. And, you know, understanding if someone's got kids, if they've got dogs, what they're into, because it just means then that you've got that next ability when you start a conversation to say, well, how are the kids? Or how was your trip to this place? And, oh, by the way, I read that book you recommended. This is what I thought, you know. Hearing myself say it almost sounds old-fashioned, but I think we're losing with some generations those abilities with those social skills and to be able to connect with people personally. You know, would you agree with that? What's your take on it?
100%. I've lost count how many conversations I've had with senior learning and development people or senior the C-suite about how skills are being, the skills aren't there. And I think the issue is compounded by the fact it's important. My disclaimer to what I'm going to say now is I'm not making a judgment. But I do see, if I think as a parent, as much as a consultant, what my children would do and what I would do back in the day is totally different. So I think younger people are much more aware. I've come here 9 to 5, 5 o'clock, I'm out the door. I think that you need to invest time with people. And if that means being a little bit flexible, then you need to do that. But I do think skills are being eroded. I mean, within a BD context, you know, historically, traditional networking has been a key activity. I don't think it's quite the be-all and end-all today that it was historically. However, it's still important. And even basics like looking at someone in the eye. Yeah, a lot. You go into a retail environment and you buy anything, and unfortunately, it will often be the case that one, the person hasn't looked you in the eye. Two, they've made you feel you've always had to apologise for being in the store, and just that ability to make small talk. I had a situation yesterday. I have to be a bit cryptic here. I'm not going to name names. I was with some family solicitors yesterday. And there was a younger family solicitor who said, we were just having a chat about what you like, what you don't like about business development. And the response was, I really don't like small talk. But when I probed deeper, actually, it was a mindset of small talk is superfluous. Let's just cut to the chase and get on with it. And the point I was trying to make is that it isn't superfluous. It isn't a trivial thing. Small talk is necessary to build trust with somebody and find a connection. And without that connection, you're going to have difficulty actually progressing that conversation, whether that's internally or externally. So I'm making a business case here, which is that small talk is important. And I think it's an art that's dying. So, and it isn't about talking about the weather. You know, it's about genuinely making a connection with somebody.
I agree completely. I've had timeless, I'm not like so old myself, but I've had like times throughout my career where I've gone into a new work environment and you just do a little bit of like, recon on what people like. Do you know what I mean? Talk to them about their hobbies. And more often than not, this sounds so like almost sociopathic, but if you can get someone to talk to you about what they're passionate about, like they get the impression that you're mates, and you maybe are mates, but they get the impression of a bond there.
Is that why you're such a chatty animal in the office?
Yeah, if you know, I talk to people about different things as well, you know.
I want to build on that point, Ollie. And again, I won't name the name of the individual, but I will name the name of the organization because it's in the public domain. Much earlier in my career, when I was in my latter days at P&G, P&G acquired Tam Brands, the manufacturer of Tampax. Now, at the time, most of the employees were, very few employees went from Tarrant Brands to P&G. So there was a lot of redundancies, and my job was basically to, from a sales integration perspective, I had to go into Tarrant Brands offices and get all the sort of business intelligence. So when I walked through that door, I was Procter & Gamble. There was only me. And my job was to talk to the sales team. Well, the sales team was basically one guy, one senior guy. And he didn't like me because in his world, I was responsible for what happened. West Bromwich Albion Football Club and Curry changed everything. Everything. Because I picked up on the West Midlands accent and sensitively sort of broached the subject of football. And when he said West Bromwich Albion, I am an anorak, so I was able to recite anyone that played for West Bromwich Albion between 1970 and 1980. Mm-hmm. And it was like a light switch had been flicked. We went for a curry afterwards. He gave me everything I needed from a business perspective, went back to P&G, happy days.
You've just stripped yourself back to being a bloke there, haven't you?
Well, I didn't really want to say that, given the sort of context of an HR podcast, but yes. I mean, trying to sort of frame that, it's about, if you try hard enough and you have an open mind, I think you can form a connection with just about anybody. And some situations are certainly very challenging. And on the surface, it might appear that one hasn't got that much in common with somebody else. But actually, we're all human beings at the end of the day. We all have insecurities. We all seek affirmation. We like to feel valued and listened to. And, you know, with the exception of people that are big fans of Coldplay, I can pretty much get on with everyone.
I'm probably going to go with what...
Sorry, I struck a nerve there.
No, not at all. But I'm going to go with what was kind of a bit unspoken then, and what I think people would actually be now saying to their, you know, their car stereos or whatever, saying, you know, we're advocating the boys' club where we talk about football and curry. I have been to so many events, social occasions, you know, sporting events that I have zero interest in, but I need to be in the room. I want to be in the room. And I think, you know, sometimes we've got to leave a bit of pride or, oh, well, I'm not into that at the door, to think, well, if I want to develop, if I want to get on, if I want to make these connections, if I want to be in the room, I can't expect everybody to come to me. I've got to, sometimes you fake it till you make it.
Of course, yeah.
You know, so can I sit in a football box and talk about the offside rule and identify all the players on the field? Absolutely not. But can I have a decent conversation in there with someone about their kids, their holidays, and then form a connection afterwards? Absolutely. And I think sometimes we have got to put that, almost the selfish interest, to one side, get in the room and go and find another interest.
I want to switch that around, Alyssa, because, and this is probably me being defensive, but I'm conscious of the fact, certainly earlier in my career, that I might have been defined wrongly as, yeah, he's a bloke, he likes football, he likes a beer, blah, blah, blah. Actually, if one can put one's prejudice, which we all have, everybody has some degree of prejudice or certainly makes assumptions about situations, but I can comfortably talk about other topics. You know, I can talk to you about Jane Austen novels comfortably. And for me, and this might sound a bit strange or trite, I don't know. I had one training experience with, we're talking about kind of small talk, and the particular chap I was working with, I would say, perhaps fits that stereotype, very, very blokish, very much BD was just about drinking. And the counsel I gave, we'll call him Lee, which wasn't his name. I said, have you ever listened to Radio 4? And he said, Radio 4? You're having a laugh. I listen to Talk Sport. I said, seriously, Lee, put your assumptions to one side. Just listen, just go through the pain if it's painful. Just listen, like educate yourself. Just listen to Radio 4, because what you'll find is there's other stuff out there. And by having more points of reference, you might actually discover you've got interests you didn't even realize. You'll learn stuff about the world. You will find it much, much easier to converse with people. So I think people need to read more and listen more broadly. Because I wouldn't want to be defined as just an obsessive Mansfield Town supporter, which I am. But
it's a brave thing to admit.
It's a brave. We play Everton in the League Cup next week. I'm really excited. you know, there's more to people than sometimes is apparent if you're prepared to put those assumptions and ask good questions, and then listen and pick up on cues and be observant and be inquiring and do your homework as well. I mean, practical stuff. LinkedIn is brilliant. One of the LinkedIn is often talked about in the sense of, from a marketing perspective, that does a disservice to LinkedIn. LinkedIn is brilliant at finding things out about people, which then enable you, make it easier to find connections, because you find out that someone, I don't know, was in the same halls of residency or university, or they're connected to your next door neighbor or your mate, or they, I don't know, just had some kittens or whatever it is. So people should just go to a bit more trouble to do that, do a bit more due diligence, and they'll find it's easier to converse with just about anyone.
And I think with LinkedIn, you know, some people get it, some people don't. You know, the last networking thing I came to with you, Bernard, and I was chatting to someone who said that, you know, they were being encouraged to go on LinkedIn, encouraged to try it, but felt they didn't really know what to do with it. And, you know, we found it an exceptional tool as a business. We're regular users on it, to the extent where in my local pub, someone actually came up to me and said, you need to get off LinkedIn and get a life. which I thought was, I didn't want to say, well, I don't actually write anything that's on there. The lovely Dawn does it all for me,
but
whatever. And I'm going to aim this at, you know, HR consultancies. So these businesses, setups, you know, I'd say probably not dissimilar to other professional services. So like your law firm. So what can these HR consultancies be doing on LinkedIn? What can they do to help drive their business and use it for business development? If they haven't got the confidence to do so, they're not really sure where to start. What would be your tips?
It's part of personal branding. So just the same as, you know, if you had a shop, you'd want the shop window to look attractive and welcoming and to be engaging and to reflect what's inside the shop. So for me, what people should be doing on LinkedIn is to have the confidence to be the best version of themselves. It is a business platform. It's not a personal platform. It is business, but people buy people in business. So for me, it's about framing things in an authentic way, which is congruent with how that individual engages with the world. So if you are someone who is naturally, I don't know, a visual person, then use visual metaphors, use lots of images. If you're somebody who's very direct, be punchy on LinkedIn. If you're somebody who's, I don't know, more highbrow, then yeah, be highbrow on LinkedIn. I think people overthink things. I really do. I also think there's a misunderstanding that this is not binary. A lot of the objections I get about LinkedIn is because people say, you know, it's a business platform. So how's it relevant if I talk about, I don't know, my holiday? Now, if you just talk about your holiday and there's no context, business, then I think that is irrelevant and wrong. But if you can make a connection or parallel with something which does relate to business, then I think that's fine. I think not being visible is dangerous. And in an ideal world, the relationships and visibility would all be in person. But it's not possible because there's not enough hours in a day, and you can't always be accessible to somebody at the other side of the world. So I think LinkedIn is a really efficient and powerful tool to help you in your personal branding and communications. Where do you get started? First thing I would say is, just like going back to the shop analogy, most people are lazy and they don't give you much time. So the first thing you got to do is first impressions. If the headshot and your banner and the first thing people see doesn't engage or grab them, they're not going to go any further. So have a good shop window. You know, would you go in a restaurant if there's a sticker outside, say Harton's Good Food Guide 1998, you know, it's 2025. So keep things fresh, but don't overthink things. People overthink things.
I do take some umbrage with LinkedIn, me. I draw the line at some spots, I must confess. Weddings and that, mate.
I agree, but here's the thing. What you're saying is, let's not confuse strategy with execution. It's like saying, oh, PowerPoint is rubbish because death by PowerPoint. Some people use PowerPoint really badly and it does feel like death by PowerPoint. Nothing wrong with PowerPoint, not PowerPoint's fault. I'm making the case, it's not LinkedIn's fault. A lot of people don't use LinkedIn very well.
They misuse it, is that what you're saying?
They misuse it for sure, but it's not the tool's fault. Just what one other thing on LinkedIn, and this is something I've only learned, I'd say relatively recently, in fact. I used to be of the sort of mindset that the people that engage with you on LinkedIn, you can see them because they're liking or they're commenting. And one could take the view, well, I haven't got many likes, there aren't many comments, it's the same old people, so it's a waste of time. However, the thing that's becoming increasingly apparent to me is a lot of people do engage with content, but just don't make it public. And I know that because anecdotally, people have said to me, I really like this, or sometimes even I really didn't like something else. But don't underestimate the reach. It's massive. I even had a situation, and this is too much information, in the sauna last week, some complete stranger, you mentioned the local pub, a guy in the sauna said to me, you're the guy, the seagull nicked your running shoe.
That's, yeah, that's from me. LinkedIn. That's appropriate, though. I think that's all right.
I don't know if talking with strangers in a sauna is appropriate. I'm a strictly, like, no talking situation there. I think it depends as well. You know, when people put their wedding on, no, probably not appropriate. If someone then goes, I got married, and while I was walking down the aisle, I thought about these six strategies.
Oh,
that's not good either. It makes me cringe. It really does. When they're like, this is what I learned about B2B sales during my first child being born. And
it's birthed like a meme culture, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, big post, I got married at the weekend, love my life. And this is what it taught me about B2B SaaS.
Yeah,
I love that.
Oh, I don't. If I can then remove someone from the feed, it does my head in, I tell you.
I agree. I think the other thing I would say with all of this stuff is it's about beginning with the end in mind and being clear about what are your objectives. Is this about growing a network? Is this about staying visible? Is this about positioning yourself in a certain way in the marketplace? It's just a channel. That's all that it is. But, you know, something that everyone listening to this will have in common is people struggle with time. There are, you know, I don't know anyone who doesn't constantly have a struggle with conflicting priorities personally and professionally. And where social media, if it's used appropriately, can help you is it can give you, you know, I think I've got 7,000 people, something like 7,000 followers on LinkedIn. Well, I can't think of an easier way of reminding them that I'm still there. I mean, imagine if you try to phone 7,000 people up. That's going to take a long time.
So I think we're on to our sort of parting question now. And this is what we ask everybody who is a guest on the series. Who would you recommend for us to have as a guest next?
A maverick, somebody who leads an organization who's, I'll tell you, I did actually have a thought of this. Somebody who I think would be really interesting is the guy that owns Timpson's, you know, is it Mr. Timpson?
I forget, it might be, yeah.
I think he'd be really interesting because, you know, there's a business that's got quite a different model. And as somebody who is, I'm not sure, I should be on commission here, as someone who's has got a reasonable number of shoes re-heeled and keys cut in Timpson's, up and down the country, not just one branch, I've never had a bad experience yet. I've never had a bad experience.
What else can you get done there?
Don't they do the digital car keys?
They do use shoes as well, don't they?
They do shoes and keys. But if you think, I suppose they're, you know, over the generations, their core business has managed to stay the same.
God, it's so good. Yeah, you're in a Morrison's or an Asda, there's always one there.
Yeah.
That would be, that's my answer. Get Mr. Timpson in.
So if you could leave our listeners with one takeaway from this session, what would it be?
People by people. Be visible.
Nice and easy.
That wasn't, I'll be honest, I didn't think it'd go that way, the podcast, but we got quite good content there on like social branding and stuff.
I think, we've done what we do well, which is we had a bit of a chat.
Yeah.
You know, the scripted stuff never really goes so well. And I always find with these, we've got the questions in case we run out of things to talk about, but actually just having a bit of a chat's great.
I'm opinionated on just every topic under the sun, but my opinion on podcasts is the best ones are always a conversation. They're not, here's a script, I'll ask you this question, you give me this answer. It just comes across as wooden, stilted. It's not real. Keep it real.
No, definitely. I've always said I want to be entertained. I only watch podcasts that make me laugh every so often. As simple as that, really. Or smile, I suppose.
So you never watch the HRER, then?
Oh, God, no. That's a lie. I obviously consume my own product. Thanks for coming on, Bernard. It's been a pleasure to meet you, mate. Until next time, like, comment, subscribe. Cheers.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.